Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Francisco, and happy graduation.
Thank you. I can't say likewise because I...
caught you off guard.
Yeah, you did. Where are we going today?
Well, Father's Day is Sunday coming up. I'm looking at a picture of me and my dad. Every year for 10 years, right near Father's Day, I've done a show celebrating fathers. And it's an interesting journey because generally the show, I'll give my pitch about dads and open up the phone lines, and the stories start pouring in about how great mothers were when dads weren't there. And every year I'm more than a little disappointed because I think, well, where is the celebration of fathers? Why is our loudest narrative about fathers the stories of fathers that left or didn't hold up their end of the bargain or weren't there to see people through? And I keep trying. Every year I take another stab at it and say, let's celebrate fathers again for Father's Day, because I think it's an important narrative. And this year more so than ever for me, because my daughter Kirsten, as you know, had a little boy in December, Barrett James Witowicz, and he's named for my husband, Kirsten's dad, and my father, Jim Weisenborn. And so there's a lot of weight to that name and to the future for Barrett. And it feels more important than ever for me to do something to help change the cultural narrative that would almost eventually, inevitably put Barrett in the position where he's vilified by a large portion of our population, because the story we seem to be stuck on is that masculinity is toxic and men are part of the patriarchy that is oppressed and exploited and hurt society. And there's got to be more than that, especially now that my little grandson is making his way through the world and you, Francisco, are graduated and moving out into the world. And I want all these beautiful men to be able to feel proud of who they are and their story and the narrative and their place in culture. So I thought, how do we address this? How do we go there? And, you know, my own experience with my dad might be similar to a lot of women. It was great when I was little and fun and we did everything together. And then as I hit my teenage years, and I think he was terrified of me because he'd grown up with all brothers, that things got really challenging for us. And they were challenging, you know, for a good portion of my teen years and young adult years. But we've been lucky enough to live long enough that now my dad is 83 and I'm 60, that we have a really beautiful relationship. And I'm so thankful that we got there and that he was able to get there, because he also is a product of the story he was raised with and needed to get to a place in his life that he could be free to express himself in more ways than the very narrow definition that he was given growing up by society. And so it was freeing for him to hit his 60s, I think, and no longer feel compelled to live up to that one narrow story. But not all men get to have those years. So we need to start earlier. We need to start from birth or even from pregnancy, changing the narrative and the story. So when young men emerge into the world, they feel as held as young girls feel held, and that story shifts. So in order to do that, I thought, let's tell the story differently today. Let's invite back. Remember Ari Guajardo Johnson, our birth bruja that was here a couple months ago? Well, we had such a great conversation and we finished the show and then talked for another hour. And I thought, oh my goodness, I want to come back to Ari and talk to her, because Ari has had years of experience in the birth room and helping people through the process of pregnancy and postnatal care and postpartum care. And I want her to come in and give her lens and perspective and see if we can broaden this conversation. So we're going to come at Father's Day from a little different direction. And we're going to talk about the role of fathers in childbirth, parenting, postpartum support, and the positive impact of healthy masculinity as support in the birth room. But we're also going to take it a step further. And we're going to talk about the importance of inclusive prenatal and birth care for trans men who birth. Because being a father is a broad, broad, defined, undefined world. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And you can be part of the conversation. If you have a question or comment, our number is 805-549-8855. Francisco will be happy to read your question over the air. You can follow us on Instagram or Facebook if you want to see a picture of me and my dad. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can subscribe by going wherever you subscribe to your podcast. Hit subscribe, leave a review so other people can find us, and our shows will be uploaded to listen to at your convenience. And you can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. So here's where we are today. We're going to take a quick break and come back and chat with Ari. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Now the man at my house, he's so big and strong. He goes to work each day and he stays all day long. He comes home each night looking tired and beat. He sits down at the dinner table and has a bite to eat. Never a frown, always a smile. When he says to me, how's my child? I said that I've been studying hard all day in school, trying very hard to understand the golden rule. I think I'll color this man father.
Color him father.
I think I'll color him love.
Color him love.
Said I'm gonna color him father.
Color him father.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Good afternoon, and hi, Ari. It's good to see you.
Thank you for having me back.
All right, so let me do the little intro of who you are for everyone. Ari Guajardo Johnson is a queer, biracial, trauma-informed birth worker, holistic wellness coach, community organizer, host of the Birth Brewha podcast. She is also a daughter, a lover, a creative, a visionary, a dog mama, and she works for her papa, so I'm sure she has some stories about that as well.
We would need a whole other episode for what it's because like working with your father.
Father daughter thing is magically complex, and my sister also has worked with my dad her whole adult life, so I'm sure that is a whole nother show we could talk about. But thank you for coming in today and just kind of taking a whole new spin on the annual Father's Day conversation.
Thank you. I really appreciated A, you inviting me back, and B, especially around this topic, because I too have a really loving relationship with my dad, and it's been full of all sorts of challenges and blessings, and also just speaking a little more specifically to my work. So yes, I'm a birth worker. I've also been working with, I've been supporting survivors of sexual violence for about 13 years now, 12 or 13. And I'm also really passionate about communal healing and collective justice. And those seeds were planted in a large part because of my dad, because of his, he's an attorney. And I remember being in like fifth grade, riding in the car with him and getting really into hearing about his cases and the notion of justice and the notion of how it's our duty as part of loving each other and community. It's our duty to help stand up and support each other, you know, for those who perhaps can't or aren't in the position to or have a lot to risk and et cetera. So anywho, yeah, I wouldn't be here today without my dad. And so a lot of threads are coming together for this show. So thank you.
So would you have said when you were 15 that your father's work inspired you?
At 15, I was giving a speech in high school class about how I wanted to be an attorney. So
interesting. So yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. But then what happened was I took the LSAT, which is what you need to get into law school. I took it twice, completely bombed when I thought I rocked it out both times. I was interning for a law firm. I was interning for a legal organization that worked with representing activists for free in the Bay Area. And then I was also working for a law firm. And all this happened at the same time. And what I realized is that the justice part, the community organizing, the working with folks one-on-one, that was my passion. And there's all kind of lawyers, but some lawyers, shall we say, do more paperwork than others. And so I knew that ultimately I didn't want to be someone who spent most of my time, you know, working with people through paperwork. I needed that face to face. And so that's what actually started me on the nonprofit path, which got me working for San Francisco Women Against Rape, which is a rape crisis center in San Francisco. And I guess the rest is history.
So how do we thread in the masculine narrative into your story and your experiences as a survivor and doing this work? Because I'd imagine that would make it very complex for you to be at peace with the masculine narrative, given that you were exploited and assaulted.
Man, so that's a big question.
I know, I'd like to go there first.
Right? Oh my gosh. Interestingly, I was kind of thinking about this before the show, about how to jump into the concept. So first off, I want to talk about patriarchy, because if we're talking about ending sexual violence, that 1 bajillion percent means that we need to talk about patriarchy. And patriarchy is it's the valuing of masculinity and men over femininity and all other genders is what that means. And patriarchy is something that can be taught, it can be perpetuated by all genders, so not just men, right? We see this in a lot of how a lot of female-identified folks will raise their boys, right? They'll raise them being like, no crying, you know, you're too old to cry, or so, you know, that's just one example. So it's important to note that patriarchy is something, again, that's perpetuated by all genders. And as you mentioned earlier, it's separate from men and masculine people, yes. Right? So I guess to come into this, I think it's just important to note that, because patriarchy is something that, yes, it perpetuates violence against women, but it also perpetuates violence against men, violence against, you know, gender diverse people. I mean, hopefully in a bit, we can dive a little bit more into what healthy masculinity looks like. Cause I think a lot of times folks, perhaps this crowd who's listening to this, you know, this show is a little more familiar with identifying toxic masculinity and ways that masculinity can be harmful. But it's important to note that it's harmful against men too. And so my hope with today's show is that we can talk more specifically about what healthy masculinity can look like, and more specifically, not just how it can benefit birthing people, but how it can benefit specifically men and masculine folks.
I love that. Well, and I know that was a big, deep question, but sometimes I feel like we have to lay the playing field to understand how we can expand our perspective or change our perspective so that the story can change. Because you said, I think all of us could identify toxic masculine experiences in our lives pretty easily, but then how to talk about changing that narrative. And one of the things you mentioned was about birthing and the birth experience. And I think let's dive in there, because I think a lot of men get lost in the birth experience because it's, and I'm going to side note this and you will understand why. I am not saying that we do excellent work helping women through the birth process. I want to preface it by that. Listen to previous shows, because there are a lot of issues with the birth process for female identifying folks. But having said that, it's not that great for the male identifying folks who are trying to be in there as a support system. So it's there's a lot of room for growth just in that whole birth and partnered and support experience for both parties or either party. So let's dive in there a little bit.
Yeah. So for the context of this conversation, I would like to preface that I will be primarily speaking from my experience and my experience working within, but also my experience researching birth in the States, right? So if we're going to be talking about other countries, this is going to be a very different conversation, right? So as you said, birth in the US is a wild thing. I say it's wild because we consider ourselves a very developed country with access to care and information, and it is. What's wild to me is how much folks don't know about A, reproductive care in general, specifically reproductive care when it comes to folks with uteruses and vaginas, right? But in general. And so I think this goes back to the fact that, history books sometimes gives us the impression that a lot of time has passed when it actually hasn't. I think recently there was Loving Day, it's coming up, where it's an anniversary of a lawsuit that went to the Supreme Court that was to make it illegal for states to ban mixed race marriage, mm-hmm. right? That's within my parents' lifetime. Like, that's not that long ago. That's what, in the 80s, I believe? Like,
it how is some 60s, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like how some states still it was illegal. So thinking about how time and history works, it's not that long ago that men were not allowed in the birthing room. And so that's just within the medical system. That's not even include culturally, you know, how it's considered. And so I would say, this is just honestly off the top of my head. I didn't write this down in my notes, but I would say that culturally, things started to shift largely probably in the late 70s, early 80s. The natural birth movement, quote unquote, and by that I meant more of birthing coming in the mainstream of feminist conversation, that began more in the 70s. And then by the time the 80s came, it started to be more institutionalized. And so by the 80s is when we see a lot of institutions allowing mm-hmm. men, fathers in the birthing room. And so that started to change things. And so moving forward, I got a little deep in that rabbit hole, but moving forward, what I've seen as a birth worker practicing now is that most people who I come across with knew absolutely nothing about childbirth until they got pregnant, right? or even actually if they needed some assistance, such as like in vitro fertilization, for example, like they'll have some awareness, but mostly, right, their awareness is around the concept of fertility and conception. So most people are coming in this with very little to no experience around childbirth, let alone like how to be a support, right? Let alone, you know, what to expect in postpartum. And so it's just giant mystery. And then again, because people are so uninformed, birthing people are so uninformed coming in, the priority is informing them. And then the second priority is informing their support person, which, you know, can be, for example, their partner, their male partner. So therefore, this is a big long roundabout, but I just want to affirm what you said, which is that the role of fathers specifically in the birth room is a commonly, it's low on the priority list for a lot of people. So a lot of people don't even know where to begin.
And it's a shame because, my sister and I are 10 years apart. So between when I was born and my sister was born, my dad had the option to be in the room when my sister was born. I don't think he took it, but never participated. And I think that's a part of a big disconnect that men suffered for years and years because they weren't there for that bonding moment of birth. But then going through the process with my husband and him being right there and it felt so much. I wonder if for my husband's generation, our generation of fathers in the 1980s opened that door to dads, therefore also being much more involved in their children's lives. Like there has to be a connection from that birthing partnered experience and them taking more ownership or participation in
yes.
the child rearing.
Yes. Well, because also in the 80s, like for example, one of the big known classes is Lamaze. Right. So it was really encouraged for dads to be active in the Lamaze. And I think that was one of the shifts that happened where male partners were encouraged to be a part of the pregnancy experience. Right. And then coming into the birth room, one of the things that I've seen happen is sometimes birthing people do have anxiety about having their partner there. A lot of times it's because they're afraid of their partner being eternally turned off by seeing the basically a baby come out of a vagina. It is wild. Everyone who's listening to this, if you've never seen one, you could see one on YouTube. It's pretty intense. And what I've seen is that while there can be some uncomfortability you know, around the intensity, the physicality of the experience, what I've seen is actually most male partners going through with a deep respect mm-hmm. for their partner's body, because you see the intensity of childbirth. I mean, even if someone's on an epidural, you still see the intensity of it happening, and you can't help unless you've got stuff, you know, a lot of barriers, you can't help but go through without this deep, profound respect for the birthing body. And of course, that contributes to a deeper respect and connection to that life, you know, that emerges on the other side of that experience.
And it is, it's so representative or indicative of a lot of our culture of not wanting to look behind the curtain of many things, whether it's death or childbirth or sadness or grief. You know, mm-hmm. we want to hide a lot of that. And it's unfortunate because it's part of what numbs us to the experience of actually being alive, and being alive is messy. If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And my guest today is Eri Guajardo Johnson. She is a birth worker and a wellness coach. And, you know, I never, because you also have your master's in women's studies and religion as well, or women's spirituality. Is that correct? I want to make sure I get it right.
Yeah. So the master's is women, gender, spirituality, and social justice. And yes. it is within the women's spirituality program of the California Institute of Integral Studies.
In case people were wondering why I turned to you for this information, I want to make sure that we put that out there, because you've done your work around this field. And so I'm going to toss it to you a little bit. What's the first thing that comes up for you around this topic that I brought up today about the role of fathers in the birth room and postpartum support and prenatal care? Yeah. What resonates for you with that?
All right. So first off, what comes up to me is the impact of patriarchy on men, because patriarchy tells men that they are supposed to be, they're supposed to be the breadwinners, they're supposed to be the ultimate decision makers for family. They're supposed to have, they're always supposed to be in control of their emotions and of the situation. And just those things right there, what I shared, those are really contrary to birth, because birth is completely unknown, right? Even the most quote unquote smooth, you know, uncomplicated birth, you're still up to, you know, to creator's decision, right? So it's a huge sense of being out of control. It's the fact that most, for example, the average birth for a first-time birthing person from the beginning of contractions onward is 42 hours. So it's a really long experience. And so a lot of people, you have that lack of sleep, therefore you're more vulnerable, you're more raw, you're more desperate, right? Like, so again, the challenge of being out of control of ourselves happens. And then there's that vulnerability about how, even if you read the books, even if you attend the classes, the process of becoming a parent can be a really challenging thing. Like, you can be really excited for it, but also for a lot of people, it can bring up all the wounding that you had growing up, whether it be in your family or just, for example, growing up, because again, right, a big part of my expertise is working with survivors of sexual violence. So even if you grew up in an amazing family, as a survivor, one of the things you could fixate on is like, how do I protect my kid from being sexually assaulted, right? So there's a lot of really deep, really complex stuff that comes up. And unfortunately, with the rigidity of patriarchy, men and masculine folks aren't encouraged to access the vulnerability, the softness, the flexibility that's required, you know, to do that. And so, yeah, I see that as a huge barrier when it comes into the birth room. And that's also, I want to share one of the blessings, some of the magic that happens in the birth room, is that you see specifically men work through this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so especially, I mean, yeah, if you're talking about going on day two, day three of a birth, you know, you see tears, you see, especially like if, so for example, too, sometimes people ask for doulas because they're like, I'm not sure if my husband's going to be able to emotionally support me the way that I need to. And then you better believe, friend, that by day two, day three, huge shifts in their relationships. And next thing you know, that partner is stepping up in ways that he hadn't been able to do before that birth room, you know? And so there's this huge healing that happened in the birth space. So those are a few things that came up.
No, I love this. And I want to circle back around, which has nothing to do with our topic, to the 42 hours, because wouldn't that be important to tell pregnant people about birth? Because we have this strange idea that the faster the birth, the better, or that we should induce labor or speed it up. Because no one ever told me until this minute that 42 hours is part of it. My first birth was 36 hours, and I felt like I had been some oddball in the world. But I wish I had known that. I wish I'd known that when my daughter went through the birthing process twice, because that's huge. If you knew that, then how much more could you relax into the experience? And it makes a lot of sense that it would be 42 hours, because as you said, you're transitioning a life out of your body. It should not be fast. And then you add that part of you're creating a family. It's not just the birth of the child and the mother, but it's the birth of the family, the partners. And so that whole, it should be a long, almost journey to emerging in a different way. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and that speaks to, as I mentioned, like the struggle in the States about people being informed. Because the more that we're informed, so not just to mention, you know, you said the ability to relax, but not just that, so many people are looking at the clock and they're like, something's wrong. Something's wrong with my body. I'm not doing it right. Something's wrong with baby. When it's like, actually, it's completely normal. But also that's kind of what happens too, that the disconnect can happen with the fact that most births occur within the medical system. And so then what happens is the medical system focuses on teaching you what happens once you get through the door, right? So notice I said from the beginning of contractions, which I'm not sure about your births, but for some people, you could be contracting for days, you know? So from the beginning of early labor all the way through, right? It could be that long. And it's really important to not just educate birthing people with this, but again, educate the family, the support people, because it manages expectations. And it also, especially if folks work with doulas, this is part of our job, is then you have enough room to be like, okay, how can I show up as my best self for my partner, right? So also, if I had a dollar for how many partners, part of our birth plan was me reminding them to eat, because they knew that he would get hangry, you know, like he'd blow blood sugar. Like, and that's like straight up part of my job is to take care of everyone. Right. And so knowing that if we, again, like speaking specifically, you know, to men, the more that they are in tune with themselves, the better they know what they could do to show up as their best versions.
And it's a different goal from what I'm hearing you say, because the gendered story is you need to be strong and be able to fix it. And if there's an emergency, like I watched my son-in-law this in December when my daughter was giving birth, and it, you know, it was fairly uncomplicated, but there was a tense hour. And I saw in him this panic of I should be doing something or fixing. I could see it in his eyes. And so you hit on that really well, that men have a very narrow definition of the things they actually can do to support. So if I can't fix it, if I can't yell at someone and take charge, then what is my role? And the reverse then tends to be, I'll rub her back and give her ice chips, and that becomes equally as annoying. So, you know, their wife's like, get away, stop touching me. And so then you watch the men retreat. So we're going to take a break briefly, but what are a couple ways that it can change for men in the process? Because you're talking about actually being there not just for the birthing mom, but for the birthing dad, so that he can be fully engaged and not feel like he has to fall back on primal instincts.
Yeah. So, I mean, briefly, and we can talk more if you'd like after the break, briefly, a big part of what I do in prep for my clients is I invite them to think about what are the ways in which you guys connect as a couple? right? First and foremost. For example, some people connect by going on long walks. Some people connect through touch, you know, in physical intimacy, words of affirmation. Those are all examples. So by starting off with what are the ways in which y'all already connect, let's go from there. And then we can brainstorm specific ways of connection and communication, right? Translate that into the birth room. And so that can be really huge because, again, it's important to affirm the avenues that are already existing versus trying to tell, you know, partners or, you know, support people that they need to learn this whole new language, you know, which can be really intimidating and kind of defeating, especially if they're bad at it, you know?
And you don't know how anyone's going to respond. None of us know how we're going to respond during the labor process. So if your partner has one plan and you don't respond well to it, then that can set up for a lot of disappointment. You are tuned into KCBX. I am Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guest today is Eric Guajardo Johnson. We're talking about the role of fathers, the many, many different roles of fathers in our lives from birth, through partnered support, and through life in general. And if you'd like to be part of the conversation, if you have a question or comment, our number is 805-549-8855. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be back to continue our conversation. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
He doesn't fight crime or wear a cape. He doesn't read minds or levitate. But every time my world needs saving, he's my Superman. Some folks don't believe in heroes 'cause they haven't met my dad. Loves his workshop in rock and roll. He's got a hot rod and a heart of gold. And you could say he's a man of few words, but he talks a lot within. And even though I'm a little taller, I still look up to him. He built me a house in the arms of a tree. He taught me to drive.
Thanks for listening to this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. If you have a question, you can call them in, 805-549-8855. Our conversation with the Reluctant Therapist continues right now. Elizabeth, back to you.
Thanks, Francisco. So, Ari, let's move past birth. And of course, we're not saying that we've taught those lessons. But now you know everything you need to know about birth. But I want to keep transitioning into the support piece for fathers postpartum. And I want to tie it into what is the positive masculine narrative that we want to start telling, living from the moment that new life is here and that father becomes a new father. What needs to change? How does the narrative need to change?
So I would say so many things are coming to mind. I would say first and foremost, it's really crucial for us when we're talking about postpartum care, it's really crucial for us to include partners in that story, not just focusing on the birthing person and, you know, breastfeeding, for example, or chest feeding. And it's because when we as birth professionals, whatever that may be, when we leave the space, the family is left alone, right? They're their own unit. And so it's crucial that the birthing person and the partner, if there is one, right, are well taken care of for that wellness of the baby. So I think that one of the things that needs to shift is that we need to start tuning in and prioritizing what men need as new fathers, or like right away. Like, for example, again, going back to practical examples, a lot of times when I ask in my prenatal visits, right, when I ask the partners, what do you do for yourself? A lot of times they'll say something like, oh, I go for a run, or I play soccer with the boys, or, you know, I video, right? I play video games. Something that's completely separate from the home, the family, all that. And there's a pressure for quote unquote good husbands, good partners, to completely throw away all of those individual things to prioritize, right, like the birthing person and baby. And sometimes, I'll be candid, sometimes that is appropriate. And for the longevity though, it's really important that we prioritize, that everyone prioritize, that they're people too. And if we want them to be showing up for their best self, as their best selves, we need to make sure that they're doing the things that keep them grounded, that they're connecting with friends or community or family, you know, especially as I mentioned, becoming a parent, especially when you see the face of that little one, things become real. You know, you thought they were real, but then they're even more real. And so it's crucial that that men are having emotional support, whether it be by friends or family, or, you know, through social media, whatever. They need to have examples of what fatherhood can look like from the very beginning. And then the other thing, I want to shoot this in real quick, and then I want to hear your response. But the other thing is that there's so much stress around newborns. Keeping them alive is a real big concern. And then also feeding them. And so therefore, a lot of concern is put around, again, like around the logistics of breastfeeding and changing and whatnot. And it's really important. Oh my gosh. I just totally had a...
Your brain fade away?
It was so good. My heart was in it. Oh my gosh.
About feeding the baby, that dads need to have an opportunity to participate in
Thank you. Yes. That sometimes what happens is folks get so caught up in the logistics that they end up leaving baby with the birthing person like all the time. And so then they remove themselves from the situation thinking that that's what's best, right? So what's best is for me to leave them alone, or I'll go and I'll clean bottles, or I'll do laundry and that's it. And yes, that can be really important. And this is your baby too. And relationships with newborns can happen from the get-go. Bonding can happen from the get-go. We don't have to wait until babies wean from being breastfed. And arguably, you're even giving, some even experience this as giving the birthing person a break from having to hold and interact with something all day. So I want to say that because, again, like so many guys step back, hands off, I'm doing you a favor by staying out of your way. And it's like, no, friends, unless she or they specifically ask you to take some space, like, we need you. They need you.
Well, and I guess that can kind of stays along with our Father's Day theme today of from that moment of birth. And you talked about during the birth process, a lot of things come up for men. And I would imagine a lot of it is, oh my, now I'm in charge. I don't want to do it the way my dad did, or I do want to do it the way my dad did, or like all of the self-doubts that all human beings have about themselves. Very few people are so enlightened that they feel like that worked out. Everyone goes into that place of complete self-doubt. So let's talk about that shifting story, because I think what we tend to do is go polar. You know, if there's toxic masculinity, which means being aggressive and rage and violence and don't cry and be tough and have no feelings, the opposite then is all feelings, all emotions, all tuned in. And neither one of them really is a healthy masculine model. So for a man who's stepping into that role of father and wanting to shape their son, what is that? What is our new narrative? I mean, I have an idea of what I think that new narrative is. I'm throwing it out to you though. Ari, what do you think that new narrative of healthy masculinity looks like?
All right. So you already mentioned emotions. So I think I'll begin there, which is that, again, patriarchy tells us that men are only able to feel basically like primary emotions. So like anger, happiness, jealousy, lust, right? Aggression. And so a healthy expression of masculinity would be one that would not be uncomfortable with all the emotions. And when I say uncomfortable, meaning like, okay, the more that we develop self-awareness in general, right, the more control we have over our reactions, how we respond to things. So especially as a parent of a newborn, again, you're going to be tired, you're going to be stressed out, you're going to be really overwhelmed, maybe with joy, maybe with, you know, stress, whatever. But in that hyper aware state, that's the time to start noticing, how are you responding? Are you shutting down and becoming robots, or are you getting so angry that you want to punch a wall? Right. So just noticing that sense of self-awareness, and then also to practice asking for help when needed. That's another thing, right? About patriarchy that says that, oh, you're not a real man if you need to ask for help. No, being an efficient human requires that we ask for help. And especially in early postpartum time, this is the perfect place to practice, is asking for help and also delegating duties. So those are the two places I would start. What were you thinking?
Well, it's funny. I was in one place, but then you said that, so I want to jump someplace else. And it's actually a little bit of a story. And you're listening to a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I am Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Erin Guajardo Johnson. She is a birth worker and has a master's degree from California Institute of Integral Studies in Women's Gender, Spirituality, and Social Justice. Just want to make sure I keep throwing your cred out there. But it's a short story. So, you know, I've mentioned my daughter has a 5-month-old, and my husband and I have been in Montana for a while. So I felt a little guilty because it's a lot of work. You know, she has 2 children now and her husband's working and they're a little family. So I'm all into the village idea of we need, you know, a lot of people to help. And so I had my husband call one of his best friends back home and said, ask Chaz if he'll go over and take the baby for a walk just so Kirsten can take a shower or something. And my husband was like, I'm not going to ask Chaz to do that. I go, no, seriously, I know you men, you want to be asked. And so once you're asked, you can jump into action. And so he did call his friend Chaz, and Chaz went over not once but twice while Chris was there and wore the baby and took my 5-year-old and took him for hot chocolate, and Chaz loved it and the kids loved it. And so when you talk about the, you know, asking for help, it's in all the ways, like men want to be asked to help and jump in. And I think there's such a reticence of feeling like I have to have it all together, that there's weakness but to draw more healthy male role models into our families and into our lives, I think is how we start to change the narrative. That was a long way to get to that I think there are healthy models of masculinity. They exist all over my life right now in the last 20, 30 years, but I don't think we're tapping into the healthy role models and letting them participate. I think that an individualistic society that we live in prevents us from tapping into that already thriving story.
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh, so much yes. And I want to expand that last notion beyond just this concept of masculinity, because as you mentioned, our society values hyper individuality, and especially when it comes to women, we're taught, right, that that basically once baby comes out, your mission is to keep baby alive and try to get your body back to where it was before, and to continue with all your duties as if nothing has changed, right? And so, which is all those three things, it's completely unrealistic, right, to put that pressure on anyone. But also there's this stress about feeling that folks are afraid to ask for help because A, there's also this narrative that it's just our rite of passage to suffer alone, yes, postpartum, yes, right?
Everyone has before me, so we will continue suffering, yes.
And in postpartum times, people are so vulnerable and, again, underslept, stressed out, that they feel like a hot mess. And so they're afraid to ask for help because they don't want people to know how challenging the time truly is. So I just want to say... Oops, it freezes.
You're good. You're right back with me.
Okay, yeah. Reframe that all people in life need to reconsider our hesitation to ask for help, because it is a chance to give people around us a way to show their love, mm-hmm, right? And a lot of times people won't do anything if they don't know what to do, or they'll do something totally unhealthy, like they'll give you some flowers that are going to die on your table in a week, when really what you need is help, you know, washing bottles.
And again, I think if we're talking, you know, I think we've made this idea of healthy masculinity so mysterious, like it doesn't exist. So that's kind of was my goal today, to say, It is everywhere. Look around. We talk about the negative examples. We point out the toxic masculinity constantly. But what we're not pointing out is all the ways that the healthy masculinity already exists everywhere around us and is just waiting to be brought into the story and elevated and empowered and noticed and talked about. And that's why this every year Father's Day show is so important to me, because we should be talk about and celebrating all of the men that are showing up in this healthy masculine. That's why I wanted to shout out to Chaz. You know, that those men are everywhere in our world. We just yes. aren't noticing or empowering those stories because we're so busy pointing out what's not working. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and we have a call, correct?
That is correct. I am muted.
I can't hear you. Hi. So there you go.
Yeah, we actually currently have David Figueroa. He is a KCBX DJ who hosts Ratamundos, and he is actually, we're trying to work to get him to join the Zoom call via phone. And
okay.
Because actually, believe it or not, he has some experience in birth and, you know, being a part of the birthing experience with his partner in two different countries. One of his children was born in the United States and the other one is in Sweden. So we're currently figuring out how to get David on the line here. So we'll let
okay.
you know.
Well, when we get there, David, we'll join you. We'll let you join in. And I want to make sure, Ari, we had a goal for today's show. And one of them was to bring in a very common and unexpected part of the father conversation in society, and that is the role of care for trans men who birth.
Thank you for time so is flying by.
It is flying by. So I want to hit that now and see if David can get on. But I really, that is something you brought up, and it had not come into my sphere. So take it away.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I want to recognize an incredible community educator that speaks a lot about this. Their name is Kingya, K-I-N-G space Y-A-A. They're on Instagram and social media. Their hashtag their handle is Queer Birth Worker. And they focus specifically on reproductive care for trans and gender nonconforming folks. So I just want to give them a shout out. So when we talk about transgender in this conversation, what I'm talking about are people who are born When we're talking about transgender, we're talking about people whose gender identity is not the sex that they were assigned at birth. So in this conversation, we're referencing trans specifically when it comes to birth. We're talking about transgender men, non-binary folks, gender fluid, gender queer, two-spirit. Those are some of the language to describe such folks. And I do have a few notes to talking about barriers. Is that okay if I just jump in?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Great. So due to gender discrimination, many transgender folks face significant barriers when it comes to accessing healthcare in general. And this is due to a lack of access of providers who are sufficiently knowledgeable on the topic of transgender experience. I'll give an example in just a bit. And due to gender discrimination and stigma that exists within medical institutions, so again, discrimination, lack of cultural competency, huge barriers to healthcare, socioeconomic barriers, financial barriers, it makes sense then that a lot of transgender folks and gender nonconforming folks, don't have access to care at all, or B, if they do have access, it's so traumatizing that folks will choose not, they'd rather suffer from symptoms and illnesses rather than get care because of the treatment. And so I guess to give a more specific example of how the lack of sufficiently trained care providers can result in this discrimination is, for example, so transgender men, not all, but some folks choose to take testosterone. It's a hormone. It's also commonly known as T. And and there's a lot of misinformation that's being given by care providers that don't know better. And some of the misinformation is that they'll become sterile after using T, or that if they do conceive, that baby's health will be negatively impacted. And so as such, there's a 2019 study that I found that revealed that 30% of transgender men have unplanned pregnancies. And a large part of that is due to the misinformation that they're given. So again, just stopping there, we're not even talking about birth yet, but just starting there, that's a huge, huge problem. And again, I think in recent years, we've already been giving more awareness around violence against trans folk. And again, right, like the impact of trauma on the well-being, right, especially related to suicide and self-harm. So I want to pause there. I have a few notes about what it can look like more in the birth realm, but I want to pause because I kind of flew pretty fast.
No, and that's, I mean, I'm not sure which direction with the topic either, because we're looking at the healthy masculinity, and this would just, to me, be another part of the narrative, the story. Again, we're quick to talk about all the negative aspects of masculine, the toxic masculinity, the patriarch. And so we have this stirring story that is why every year when I do the show, people call in and talk about how great their mothers were. It's just more compounding all of that negative story. So if we were going to switch the narrative, wouldn't be part of that new story is birth is not binary, or
yes.
That
yes,
that birth happens to everyone involved in the new life that's coming into the world. And if we were focused more on that, what love needs to go into that and care, instead of whose job it is or whose role it is or who the birth person is, because I think that's what gets us stuck, is we have this binary understanding of the world, and it's either good or bad or male or female or birth or, you know, birthing person or not, that it seems like the new narrative isn't just about creating a new masculine, it's actually about creating a new narrative of not, I don't want to say gender, because that just seems like, but the new narrative,
a more expansive, if I may, like a more expansive notion of masculinity. And also, thank you for tying this in, because I think, yeah, like what also this show I think is really celebrating is that being a father is not being a support person. It's not being secondary to the story of raising children. So again, being a father can be being a support person in the birth room. It could also be being the birthing person yourself. There's also incredible fathers out there who are single fathers from the very beginning. And so again, I think that's also as part of our societal work to dismantle patriarchy. It means that we need to, you know, widen and deepen our understanding of what it means to be a man, what it means to be masculine, what it means to be a father. And that's what we're doing today.
Well, and then I'm glad you brought that up, because then I always go back to Rhian Eisler's work of partnership studies, that when we talk about dismantling the patriarch, we're not talking about instituting a matriarch, that it's not the opposite, that we're not saying that patriarch must go so the matriarch can stand. What we're really talking about is the patriarch goes so partnership emerges, that is what we're really ultimately looking for, is that we're all in this together, to be High School Musical, you know, but we are to really recognize it, that what I think we're really needing to shift from, Ari, is individualistic society to a collectivistic society. And the more that we recognize that we can't, and going through the pandemic really brought that to the surface, that we are a collective whole. And if we don't stand up for each other and work together, then we crumble alone. We die in isolation. We have high suicide rates of people who feel alienated and lost and marginalized.
Yes.
Don't leave me hanging.
So I'm looking at the time. Is the call happening, or did we miss that window?
I told David that we might run out of time unless it was a brief comment.
I think we can let him in and just see what he has to say real quick.
Okay.
Yeah. What awesome.
All right, David, you are on the line.
Okay, great. Hello.
Hi, David. You got about a minute here with us. So what's your thoughts hearing this conversation?
No, my only thought was myself and my wife are the parents of two kids, and one was born here in the United States. These are both kids born in the late 90s, and the other is born in Sweden. And so we have two different experiences with those. And I was going to say that in our experience, the healthcare staffs in the U.S. and Sweden are comparable, attentive. They know what they're doing, and at that level, I'm going to say, as far as that process of giving birth and being cared for while you're in the healthcare system, it's about equal. At least that's our experience. But it's what happens afterwards that there's a huge difference. And it's because that the Swedish state and other states in that part of the world support families, and they do that by giving them time off so that, for example, the first 10 days after a child's born, you're not even asked to go into work. You're just at home getting used to being a unit. And here in the States, you have to start figuring it out right away. And then beyond that, I think in Sweden right now, it's over 400 days of parental leave per parent per child, and that accumulates. It just encourages you to be at home. And in fact, I think if you don't take the time, you get penalized. Yeah. So that type of support, I feel, is irreplaceable. Here in the U.S., it's one thing if everybody is lavishly paid and they can afford to be off work, but that's not the case.
Absolutely.
And so there needs to be a lot more work. This isn't just for fathers. It's for mothers and other support units close to the families. There just needs to be more support here for young families to get the start they need.
Yes, thank you.
And just quickly, if I've got...
No,
yeah, I was just going to say, just quickly, I was just in Sweden and saw fathers in groups pushing prams around, eating ice cream and so forth. And that's the kind of sight you see there. So these support groups start to build once the state supports it.
Absolutely. And thank you for that, because that's kind of where Ari and I were going, is how do we redefine what partnership looks like so that everyone feels engaged, so that fathers feel like they are valued and not just as a paycheck, not just as a support unit financially for the family system, because I think that's where a lot of men get relegated in child support and sending in that money, instead of from the moment that child comes into the world, they are encouraged to be actively engaged and modeling. And it comes down to the collective. Ari Guajardo-Johnson, we never have enough time. We're going to have to pick up again to a whole other topic, but I want to thank you with all my heart for coming and being my guest today. People need to look for the Birth Bruja podcast when it reappears in September. If you want to get a hold of Ari, you can find her through the Birth Bruja website.
Yes, birthbruja.com. Also on social media at Birth Bruja, and Bruja is spelled B-R-U-J-A. Thank you so much for having me today.
I appreciate it. And I want to say thank you all for tuning in. Happy Father's Day to my dad and to my husband and to all the wonderful men that are part of my world, my collective world. Thank you to all of my listeners. You can find me at Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com, Instagram, Facebook. As always, thank you for tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We will look forward to talking next week, and enjoy Live Oak on the radio.
The first time the doctor placed you in my arms, I knew I'd meet death before I let you meet harm. Although questions arose in my mind, would I be man enough against wrong, choose right and be standing up? From the hospital that first night, took an hour just to get the car seat in right. People driving off fast got me kind of upset. Got you home safe, placed you in your bassinet. That night, I don't think one wink I slept as I slipped out my bed to your crib. I crept, touched your head gently, felt my heart melt, cause I knew I loved you more than life itself. Into my knees, and I beg the Lord, please let me be a good daddy. All he needs, love, knowledge, discipline too. I pledge my life to you.
Just the two of us, we can make it if we try. Just me and you,
just me and you.